Don Scher is the current editor of Poetry Magazine. He's familiar with accounts of this connection from Stein herself and from the late poet and editor Henry Rago, who was present during some of Stein's and John's meetings. Scher talked with Lake Effect's Mayon Silver and elaborated on these encounters. He starts by talking about George John's mentor, Gertrude Stein.
Well, it's hard to know what she's better known for nowadays. Obviously, she's famous for her writing. She's famous for her prose, of course, but also her poetry. And she was published in Poetry Magazine in 1940. And her art collection was sort of a family enterprise, where that family also, because I think of their mobility and their reach and being based in some ways out of Paris, really had access to a lot of the artists and artworks that were just kind of in circulation at the time. And they Gertrude Stein, had an eye for these things, and other artists and writers had an eye for her as well. So this was kind of a circulation between writers and artists and other people that was really very common at the time.
Like a salon, kind of?
Exactly, although it seemed to move around. It's what Hemingway called a movable feast. It's kind of wherever these people kind of landed with each other, they would hang out and they would talk and bring new people into the circle.
But she was mostly based in Paris, right?
Well, she was. I mean, the war changed all that for her. And although I'm not, an expert on all of her biography, she really moved a lot and became, strangely enough, very important to the literary culture of the Midwest here in this part of the country as well. She spent many years circulating among editors and bookshop owners of Chicago, and she gave lectures at the University of Chicago that were later published in a book. So again, it's that sense of movement that I think was very common at the time that made literature and art kind of a property of everybody in the world.
So funneling in on post-war Europe, where she was after the end of World War II, what was the note she wrote about George John?
Well, she used it as a kind of blurb in case he would ever have a book, which she did try to help him put together. And I can read it to you. She sort of, like many modernist writers and artists, believed that advertising was really part of the work itself. And so when you hear this note, it sounds very much like a typical Gertrude Stein piece in its rhythms and diction. But it says this: "A great many soldiers came, and one day unexpectedly a poet. He had come and left many little pieces of paper, and on each piece of paper was a poem. He, like all the soldiers, had been in many places, Italy, France, Belgium, Holland, Germany, England, and then later India, as he was a field service man, and everywhere there were landscapes, and all the landscapes were poems. He was the only one to whom that happened, and he was a poet. I was excited and thought I would never see him again, and only have the little pieces of paper with the poems on them, and the name George John. At the end of a long week, he came again, tall, gentle, thin, and young, and I told him he was a poet, but he knew that, and I knew it. And now I'm telling it here where the poems are printed, George John." So that was supposed to go with this book. And Henry Rago wrote about this meeting that these two people had in the November 1946 issue of Poetry, where he had an article about Gertrude Stein. And Rago was actually in the studio with these guys the night the little pieces of paper that she talks about were organized into a manuscript that was supposed to become a book. So this young, tall, pale poet, George John, was sitting kind of uneasily on a little chair, and Gertrude Stein was sort of going through these pieces of paper with poems on them and telling people where to sit. And she said to George John, "You sit there," and she said to Henry Rago, "And you sit here." And then Alice Toklas came in and asked what they were doing. And Gertrude Stein said, "We're going to make a book." And so they got a table and an ashtray for Gertrude Stein. And Alice Toklas made some mulled wine for everybody. And then they start to go through this manuscript. And what Rago says is that Gertrude Stein knew very quickly which poems that she liked and didn't like. And sometimes she would say, "This is bad, George. Good heavens, it's bad. No, you'd never want that." And then they would all start laughing, and this young fellow would laugh too. So that's kind of where all this started. That's you know, that was written up in 1946. And then the next year, a sequence of his poems appeared in Poetry Magazine. It was called Four Poems. And for a lot of people, being in Poetry Magazine kind of puts them on the map. That's what happened, say, with T.S. Eliot and the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock. But it seems not to have happened with George John exactly. He did go on to have a couple of books. And in fact, the book that Gertrude Stein and George John worked on was published some years later. It had a title, which is sort of a weird title, sounds weird to us, A Garland About Me. And Henry Rago, in 1953, some years later, reviewed the book, and he had some real reservations about it, which turned out to be prophetic. Rago was a very good editor and talent spotter, so he had some reservations about it. And I think that George John did go on to have another book after that, but we don't hear too much about him nowadays.
So for his moment in the light of poetry, the poetry world, getting his poems published in Poetry Magazine, is it possible for you to read a few of the poems?
Here's the first part of his four poems sequence. Aunt Ida, hours I stood upon your terrace, watched the one light of the world harass the flowers, are frantic to live. Aunt Ida, I have no terrace. Upon me stand only the hours of others, alas, to cherish. Aunt Ida, let me on your terrace last more hours than the many I have not been fast and frantic for living. So you could hear that the sort of fragments and little different sort of kaleidoscopic views of the same thing, that's pretty typical of Stein and the kind of modernist writing that Stein pioneered in her own work. I feel like there's a very lovely small section in the middle of the sequence that was in Poetry Magazine, and this one says, "Where shall we begin with love? Let us begin the beginning of it. And is that at its bottom? Oh no, that even is above all." It's sort of nice. It's quirky.
Yeah. It's kind of being a little bit in love with love.
Yeah. Very much so. I feel like there's sort of worldly, nice worldly stuff in George John's poems. And he was definitely a poet of promise, but you know, promise isn't all that's required, I guess, to succeed as a writer and artist.
Yeah, it would be interesting to talk to him and find out why he didn't keep going in poetry or maybe achieve what he seemed to have been able to do.
I think it's probably a story of heartache and disappointment, but he had a good run. I mean, he got a pretty thorough review in Poetry Magazine that Rago did, as I mentioned, in 1953. And although there was a lot of praise in it, and Rago wasn't, well, no one in my profession praises people without a good reason to. But he did point out, he said, John is going to have to learn carefulness in his own way, what things to leave in his notebook as mere fumblings, what things to recognize as genuine penetrations, what sort of music is good in poetry, and what sort is a nuisance, when a feeling is about a poem and when a feeling is about a feeling. It's very lovely that Rago pays that kind of real attention to him, and it was a kind of a make-or-break moment, I imagine, for George John to see that in print in Poetry Magazine. And I think many listeners out there who write and hope to publish poetry would identify with that kind of, you know, that moment when you have to figure out, like, what goes in the notebook and stays there and what becomes a real poem and gets a readership.
Oh, definitely. I mean, even working in producing stories for radio, you have to figure out what's to keep and what's to put on the side.
Yeah.
Well, did you want to read any of the other poems?
Sure. Here's another little bit. This is part three of the four-poem sequence. It is a long time. What is a long time? And that's spelled like a long, like the word, whereas the first one is long time. It is a long time. What is a long time? Life, of course. That's too bad, isn't it? Yes, for it becomes too battered then.
And the last one?
Well, there are bits of this that are sort of, they do sound like notebook pieces. One I won't read is part of that first thing. That's a prose thing, because one of the things that he's doing here that I think was also very common to the modernist poets was mixing prose pieces with verse that's lined, you know, in laid out in lines like we expect a poem to be. So this last section, section four, has a few lines, and then there's a prose paragraph. So it goes like this: "Which has it? What? The fairest tree region? Eternity, of course, for their time in the sun are indivisibly one and sublime and uncoarse, and its upheaval of green is serene and enduring for sure, nor can ever shrivel or hide itself, but must incessantly fill the sky with its willing and wide and elated fruit, without the great furor and hurry through of our more harassed and worried world seasons. And that is why this shall be so unbelievably best at last." See, that sounds a little too much like Gertrude, I think, for his own good.
Yeah, interesting.
She may have been responding to that. I mean, you know, imitation being, you know, the sincerest form of flattery. Maybe she quite liked that he was sort of following in her footsteps a little bit. Hard to know.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose that's always a caveat of working with, you know, using someone as an inspiration.
Exactly. You know, but usually young poets, they sort of do that when they start out, and then they move along and sort of find their own way. And it's, I think the trail goes cold with George John. It's hard to tell. He may have had a hard time finding his own way, but he went considerably farther along than many people do.
Well, and part of his legacy is, in fact, a large used bookstore in the Milwaukee airport. And so many travelers are, you know, sort of blessed by the legacy of George John. They can buy books, they can buy poetry, and they can, you know, search through the aisles and, you know, have something to read.
It's a real legacy. And it makes me kind of happy that you point that out, because I think as someone, you know, who's an editor following in Henry Rago's footsteps, I often worry. I worry for the people that we do publish. Of course, I worry about people that we can't publish. And I think being able to combine your interest in books and literature and its history is a really noble calling. And after all, for those of us who love poetry, where would we be without bookstores and, you know, being able to browse and sort of make our own way through poetry and literature? So it really was a kind of happy ending there.
Definitely, definitely. Don Scher, thank you so much for sharing this with us.
It's a pleasure.
Don Scher is the editor of Poetry. He talked with WUWM's Mayon Silver.